Lou Maresca, you've got a little bit of a surprise for us. You've written a little bit of an application. Tell us what it does.
You got it. So, you know, with the new API, we wanted to make sure that we had different platforms kind of covered when it came to how do I do this for, you know, Windows or C#? And how do I do this potentially even for PowerShell? Can I write a quick script to download a specific set of episodes for a show and so on? So we wanted to kind of cover multiple different platforms. So what I did was I created a couple samples. One was a very simple C# sample using a universal app or Windows 10 universal app. But again, it's portable to Windows Store apps and Windows 8.1 and even portable to even a console app if you wanted to. And then, you know, the whole idea is to build a very small wrapper around the API so that you could go and use it and then you could expand on it. So if you wanted to do it more, if you wanted to cache the data, that kind of thing. So the whole idea is just a very simple wrapper for now, get everyone started, and then maybe in subsequent shows we can kind of expand on it.
So show us what the most simple in this little basic wrapper program looks like.
Sure. So if you share my screen here, what you can see, let me zoom in really quick. So what you'll see here is this is just a very, I'll show you the solution here. And you'll notice I have a special, it's really tiny, I apologize, but the Solution Explorer is tough to kind of expand on. But you notice I have this special universal DLL file or library that I put in a what we call a TWT API proxy. It's a very small wrapper around the actual API itself. And so what you can see here is there's just two methods in this proxy, and they're just public methods. And what you'll end up calling in here is just to make a TWT request. And I call it TWT REST request. And you can put in there the method. So, like, for instance, if we pop open to the API right here, you know, there's a lot of different ways for you to do it. I think, for instance, if you wanted to grab the shows, a method would be, hey, I want to pass in the shows. And then I have, you know, other parameters here I can put in there. So if I wanted to filter by, you know, by the name of the show, I could do the label here. Or, you know, and this will give me back details about the show. So the whole idea here is the base URL is this, you know, twit.api and then /API version 1. But then this little, you know, the actual end of the URL is the method. So if we pop back over here, if I wanted to pass in shows or episodes or whatever, I could pass it into this and say it there. And then any subsequent parameters after that, if I wanted to do label or if I wanted to do, you know, how many records I want, I could just use that that parameter there.
Let's back up just a second, because remember, sure, we did give people a quick taste of what the API looks like. Right. But let's back up to make sure that they understand what they're doing when they're accessing this. Patrick, if I wanted to, I could construct a call, yeah, a string that contains my API key and exactly the parameters that I want to call, like Lou is designing in his program, without having any code whatsoever. If I just knew how I want it to look, I could just type it into my address bar and send off to the API.
Not quite. You do have to send the key as part of the header.
Right, right.
So you can't do it all in the URL, but it is possible to do if you can edit your header in the browser request.
Yeah.
And but, I did that actually during testing while I've developed some of the backend tools.
Exactly. Well, look, that's what I was thinking. So if I wanted to, I could just start firing off requests to the API.
Yeah.
And as long as I've got the API key, because remember, that's what allows us to actually access the API, because we didn't want everyone to just start hitting the API as many times as they'd like. As long as I know how to construct the string, I can send the proper query.
Yes.
And here's the nice thing about this. All the software that we're going to be designing in the next couple of episodes is just creating that string. As long as we can, yeah, we can make it create the proper string of characters, it will do what we want it to do.
Well, you then need to interpret the results that you get back.
Right.
But once you get that string, it's going to send you the results, and then it's just up to you to parse it.
Okay. Oh, well, remind me again, how many times can I hit the TWT API with a legitimate key?
I believe it's set to 5 times per minute.
Yeah. Which will upset some people, because we've already had some people saying, wait a minute,
oh, yeah,
I can only hit it 5 times a minute, but then how am I going to write my app? Folks, the way it's designed is you can hit the app, but if you're going to be designing something that you're selling, you should have your own service that, yeah, actually collects the information.
Make your own local cache, make your own local database, data structure, whatever you want to do. You can store the stuff locally so that all the thousands of users can hit it, but you only have to make the request a few times.
Actually, right? Who serves it out again?
Threescale.
Threescale. Is it possible to pay Threescale to, like, create your own segment so that you can hit their service again and again and again? Do we allow for that?
They do have different payment levels where you can have different...
But we would have to pay. Not
Oh, yeah.
Okay,
yeah.
No, never mind. All right, Lou, go back to it. So so you started creating the header for this. Show us what the rest of it looks like.
Well, I wanted to give an example. So, like, I think Patrick said, you know, gave a good example. Hey, you can do it in the browser and see how it looks out. So this is a really cool tool, and no one's ever used it before. It's a Windows tool called Fiddler, and you can download it. Eric Lawrence is the developer of Fiddler. He used to work at Microsoft. Now he works at Telerik, but he actually created this tool. And what it does is it listens to all the HTTP traffic.
Anthony, can you get in there? Thank you. Awesome.
Yeah, zoom in there. So what you can tell is you can actually decrypt HTTPS traffic as well. So the cool thing is you'll notice over here to the right, this is the header of this request. And in there you'll see that there's my API ID and the API key here. And these are, again, the sample API keys and IDs that that Patrick created. But what you can do is you can actually right-click on this and go to unlock for editing. And I can actually edit this. In fact, I can resend this request if I wanted to. So I call replay, and I can reissue the request. And you'll notice down here it will reissue it. And then down below, you'll actually see the response. And you can see there's this huge JSON blob that comes back. And I can actually format it using this JSON formatter. And you'll notice now I have every episode of all the episodes of Coding 101 broken down in here. And nice. So you can just use this tool without ever coding anything. And actually, they have this composer over here. You can actually compose a request, and you can just send, you know, using different parameters. You know, as I'm calling shows with a filter label equal to Coding 101. And then again, I'm getting the episodes once I have the ID of the show, which is Coding 101's ID is 1680. So again, I can just issue requests from this tool without ever coding anything. And that's a great way of understanding what the API, what you need to do to send the API and what you're getting back. Because you'll notice in the inspectors over here, I'll get back, you know, the actual response down below here, which again, you'll notice has all of the Coding 101 details in there. And then that also my actual raw request that I sent up here.
Right.
Pretty cool.
And we'll be going through the parsing of the JSON blob in a bit. We've done it before. You actually did that in your application. You've done that once in your application, Lou, because the data that you get back, it looks unmanageable until you actually parse it.
Now, a tool like Fiddler is great for debugging your code because that helps you determine, is the error in my code or is it in my request?
Right.
And so I had some issues with some stuff I was trying, and I was able to put it in there and see, okay, my request actually works. I'm formatting it right. I'm just doing something else wrong. And it helped me narrow down with the issue.
And we'll include a link to Fiddler. So if you want to play with it.
It's a really cool tool.
Oh, yeah.
It's a great tool to play with. By the way, I know there's going to already be people saying, wait a minute, I can use it to intercept HTTPS. It's on your local machine, folks. So you're not actually acting like a man in the middle on somebody else.